Hello, and welcome back to another installment of EP ArchiTalk, the official podcast of the AIA New York State Emerging Professionals. Just a reminder to like and subscribe wherever you get your podcast and leave us a review. At the time of recording, we are in the month of March, Women's History Month, and we have seen great female architects all month long. According to the American Institute of Architects, data shows that today, almost half of the students in architectural programs in the U.S. are women. This number has increased progressively since the 1970s. However, the number of women that become registered, achieve upper management levels, become partners, and own architectural firms has not increased at the same rate or in the same proportion as their male architectural counterparts. Currently, only 17% of registered architects are women. Today, we have three: myself, Graciela Carrillo, and Sara Jazayeri. Graciela Carrillo, originally from Colombia, has committed almost a decade of volunteer leadership to the AIA and is currently serving as the first Latina president in the chapter's over 70-year history. She is also the Women in Architecture founder and co-chair of AIA Long Island Chapter's Women in Architecture Committee. Graciela, with her over 20 years of experience in both Colombia and the U.S., is currently working as a senior manager at NASA BOCES in Long Island. Sara Jazayeri is the president of the Bronx Chapter of the American Institute of Architects, the first woman to hold the position since the organization was formed in 1945. Shaped by years of globetrotting and an insatiable passion for the practice, Sara is an award-winning architect and interior designer with 20 years of experience in firms both in Europe and the United States. Sara is currently the founder and principal of Studio 360 Architecture and Design in the Bronx. Well, welcome to you both. Thank you for being here with us today.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you for having us.
Sure. We'll start off with questions that you both can answer. What made you want to become an architect?
Graciela, do you want to go first?
Yeah, I can go first if you want. So my story really started as actually wanting to be an engineer, sort of. I come from a family of civil engineers, my dad, my two brothers. So, and I'm like seriously the youngest one, like 15 years apart with my brother. So I really grew up just seeing drawings and plans and constructions and calculations. So all my life while in high school, I was like, oh, I'm going to be an engineer. You know, that's what I'm supposed to do. But then the last years in my seniors, I was like, no, but I like art. And why would I have to go for the same path as my family? I really don't care. So literally in my last year in high school, I decided to go for architecture. That's pretty much how I chose it, just because I was more inclined with arts, but I loved construction. So I ended up working with engineers all my life. So that's pretty much my story.
So my story is a complete 180 degrees from Graciela. I had no clue that I would become an architect. I come also from a family that were in medical field, and I wanted to be a dentist. So I went to dental school, did the pre-med path. And 3 years into college, I went to my father and I said, Daddy, I hate this. I can't go to school. I hate all, you know, I don't want to even have teeth looking at people's teeth. And I said, why are you telling me now? I said, because I don't know. Since I was a kid, you know, it was like this path and I don't know what I want to do. So then my father actually told me, you know, you're a problem solver. You like puzzles. You like challenges. You're pretty good with anything artistic. You're creative, but you're also a math nerd. So why not architecture? And to that day, I never thought of architecture in any shape or form. And somehow I got into it and I loved it. And I can't imagine my life doing anything else than architecture now.
Interesting paths to take. So with parents who
or families that weren't necessarily involved with architecture, did you have mentors along the way that were able to help you, especially at the start? Anybody who sort of guided you as you entered into your architecture career?
Absolutely not. In the field of architecture, I even had people around me that were telling me, you know, there's no job after architecture. We were in this recession when I was going to school. You know, I had even seriously thinking about opening a restaurant, and because I'm also a good cook. So, however, I had very supportive parents that even though they were not in the field, but they were adamant about education of girls. And everybody, you know, even with boys, with my brother, they were not that serious about education. But girls, yes, financial stability, independence was the goal. And it was expected. So they were my support.
What about you, Graciela?
That's an interesting question. I actually, when I started architectural school, even though I come from a family of civil engineers, my dad passed away when I was 11. And my oldest, I have two brothers. My oldest brother passed away when I was 17. And then when I started architectural school, my other brother moved to the States already. So I was basically home alone with my mom going through architectural school. But then when I graduated, my brother was like, you got to come to the States. Like, you need to come and work here. And I was like, no, I'm going to stay and I'm going to get a job by myself. Let me just do my life. And then I worked there for a while. I pretty much navigated the architectural field on my own. And then I decided to move here when things got a little bit complicated in Colombia because of my work working for the government. I left because safety issue. And then here is where I found really the mentors. So at the firm that I started working for, Cash & Associates, the architect there, it is an engineering firm, engineers and architects, but mostly engineering. So the architect was really my mentor throughout the beginning of my work life here, which was great. And then once I joined AIA, and that's the reason why I joined AIA, to get to meet more architects, then I had a lot of mentors that I still talk to all the time, like Kelly Hayes, FAA, and Jessica Sheridan. Like I check with them periodically on things that I'm not sure, guiding. Lately, you and Gok from California, he has become also like pushing me to do more stuff. And so that's pretty much the support group that I found here once I start working in the US.
Well, did you find either one of you, did you find that that made it maybe a little bit more difficult? Of course, hindsight is 2020, right? Even in looking back now, do you think that it made it a little bit more difficult or challenging or maybe even a little bit tricky that you didn't have anybody who was sort of like a champion or a mentor, somebody who you can go to and, you know, sort of talk about the challenges of being in school, studying architecture, about the early challenges that you might have seen in the career ahead of you? Was there anybody who, do you feel like that made it a little bit more challenging or tricky, let's say, to go through school?
100%. 100%. Actually, I believe that in architectural school, anywhere in the world, there are things that are missing there that we are not teaching students about. One is the business part of this field. How you do your, if you want to start your own business as an architect, what do you have to do? You know, what are the information that you have to have? That part is missing in many schools, and also the mentorship. I think this should be, every student should have a mentor, you know, that school provides through AIA, other organizations. I think I would have been the president of the United States if I had those mentors. You know, it's so, it's very tough to not having a network of people around you. Luckily, when I started my own business a few years ago, studio at 360 in the Bronx, that was when I really realized that how critical it is to have a mentor. And I have Alan Weisman, one of my previous bosses, that he's a friend and a mentor, and I'm still, you know, consider him a huge, huge help for even small decisions. Just to talk to somebody, it helps for your career. So definitely, if you're a student, don't be shy. Reach out, talk to people, try different people and see who you feel more comfortable with. And then ask them if they can be your mentor.
Going along with Sarah, yes, definitely it would have helped me a lot if I had a support system back in the days. And that's one of the reasons why I advocate and promote mentoring programs, not only on our chapter, but also as Graciela. I mentor people like on the side all the time, nonstop. And it is because I know how it was without having someone that you can go and ask questions and advice and outside from your either school or work or family. So that's why it was very important to me to create things for other students. And like, for instance, we launched the mentorship program in Long Island a year and a half ago. And we've been very successful with that program. Actually, next month, we are doing our third round, and we already have like 40 students that we're going to pair with experienced architects, newly licensed architects, and non-licensed professionals. So we can pair them in groups and start this conversation. And to me, the importance is to create that relationship that they can just, they don't necessarily need to mentor all year long. They just need to connect, and then they know that they have someone to reach out and ask questions.
Let me ask you, during your time in school and even during, let's say, your early career, you know, after you got out of school, was there ever a time where you thought about changing careers, going a different path, maybe getting back to dentistry? Sarah?
No, never. Dentistry. Nothing. There's nothing wrong with it. Not that there's anything wrong with dentistry, but not my cup of tea. Yes, actually, when I was in college, I got married and had a kid. So I had to think about my career choices, you know, in going to work early in the morning, coming back late at home with a husband who was mostly working long hours. Also, it was challenging. So I actually was thinking of changing career, at least for a while. My kid is young. And then somehow, you know, I found somebody in the park when my kid was playing who was working for the United Nations, and he started to speak French. Then, you know, she said, you know, you speak several languages, you're this, you're that. Do you want to work for the United Nations? And I said, to do what? She said, you know, just go and look for openings, and I'm working there and maybe you would like it. And that's what I did. I worked for the United Nations for a few years that I loved, that I met people that I'm still very good friends with. But it gave me the flexibility, the time flexibility. The hours were working with my kids' schedule. It worked, but I missed architecture so bad that after 2.5 years, I started to work in the field of architecture.
So what were you doing at the UN? Also, this is in France?
No, in New York. States. New York. Okay. At that time, actually, we moved to New York for my husband's education, continuing education. So I was thinking of, you know, I have to get a job. Somebody has to get work. And we couldn't expect our one-year-old to do it. So it was only me. So what I was doing was translation of letters coming to the United Nations from around the world into French, English, and Persian.
Okay, great. So those are the three languages that you know how to speak.
Fluently.
Yeah, great.
I can get around with others. But to the level of United Nations, yes, those are the three.
Great. What about you, Graciela? Was there ever a time when you thought about changing careers, especially early on?
Not really. It's funny because I went for architectural school, but always the civil engineer was always in the back of my head. So even in school, instead of, well, at my school, you had two options the last year, working on a thesis, which was a design project, or going to a construction project and working like construction manager. And you're going to guess which one I chose. So I didn't do design. I went to work on a construction of a building. It was one of the big buildings at the university that just started construction. So I had a full semester just going through 7 in the morning to 4 in the afternoon to construction site. So it was a great experience for me to do that. And then once I finished school, my first job was at construction management of 48 buildings, residential buildings. So that pretty much marked my path in my career, getting involved with engineering, which I like because I feel like it's more diverse. Like I can do design work, and I have done a lot of design work, but also have a lot of engineering experience that it's very nice when you can combine both of them. At some point here, when I was already in the States, I was like, oh, I want to try something different, but not thinking that I'm going to change careers. It's because never in my life I work in retail. Like here in the States, it's very normal. You are in high school or in college and you work summertime, you go work for a retail store, it's very common, or a restaurant. I never did that because in Colombia or South America, that's not common, you just go to school and go home. That's it. You don't need to work at anything else. So I was like, I want to work somewhere else just because I have free time. That's when I finished my license, the ARE test. So I was like, I have free time now. I'm not studying. So I got a job at Oakley in the mall, sunglasses. And people couldn't believe it. I'm like, you're an architect and you're working in a retail. I'm like, yeah, I need to experience that. Plus, people at this point that know me already know I was a very, very shy person. And I'm still shy. I just work over that. Just exposing myself, and putting myself out and getting out of my comfort zone. But in reality, if you don't know me, I'm really, really, really shy. So I was like, this is the way for me to get out of my comfort zone, go to a store where nobody knows me and deal with people and open up to them and tell them, how can I help you and what can I do for you? So I ended up going there for just Christmas, that they needed someone. And I ended up staying 4 years. And this is already licensed, working here, everything. But I actually loved it because it helped me to break that barrier in communication with people. So I needed to do that to expose myself to an environment that was different from architecture or engineering and people that don't know me and my background. So I really love that opportunity. I'm not working there anymore, of course, but it was something that I needed to do to grow as a person.
Right.
And that helped a lot.
Yeah. Having worked myself at Crate and Barrel for a little time, I understand what you're talking about, because there's something about the, let's say, customer service training that you get working at a retail store that allows you to feel very comfortable with talking with strangers and interacting with strangers at, for a small amount of time. That is very good training, actually. And it works. It reciprocates into the industry that we're in now, which is a sort of high level customer service industry.
Exactly.
Right? Yeah. So what advice would you give to up and coming women architects out there who might be still in school or just out of school, sort of trying to still find their way through the early parts of their profession, of this profession? And is there any advice that you would give to young women, both women who are confident that this is what they want to do and women who may be on the fence,
For me, it's always the same thing. To young, to old, to middle age, my advice is just do it. Don't wait for the perfect time, because the perfect time doesn't exist like a perfect person. So if you want to do something, if there is something in the back of your mind that you always wanted to do, just have that vision, the big picture. For me at the time was financially being independent. But then look at it also as your goal. For example, if you want to work in a small office, if you want to work in a big office, smaller goal. And then again, break it down to manageable steps that you can handle, and everybody's different. But just do something. Just do it. Don't wait.
What about you, Graciela?
I say once you decide you want to go into architectural school, like Sarah just said, set your goals, what you want to achieve. Anything is possible. I always tell everyone, sky is the limit. You do what you want. You just need to set a plan and achieve it. But you also need a support system. And that's why I encourage so much to start looking out for mentors since the beginning. And mentoring for me is not something that, oh, that person is going to be my mentor. No, it's organic. It just creates. You start talking to someone and then you realize you're learning a lot from that person, and then you establish a connection, communication, and then that person is mentoring you without you even noticing. So that's the type of mentoring that I tell all the students just to start working on that from the beginning. Another thing that I think is very important, you're going to learn in school, yes, all the technical part, all the conceptual parts, great. But the soft skills, you really don't learn them in school. And they are really important. Hard skills, you get them all with your professors, you know, at school. Soft skills like communication skills, leadership skills, you know, relationship skills, how to write, how to express yourself, how to inspire others. Those are all soft skills that you learn on your own. Nobody's going to teach you that. And the only way you can learn that is just by interacting with people. And yeah, you may read a book, watch a video, but it's on you. You need to work on that if you don't have those skills. I didn't have those skills. I believe I have developed some sort of soft skills. I'm still not there. I'm still working on them every single day on improving, but it's something that it has to come from us. So that will be my advice.
So I had one more question for you both. I mean, you're both coming from outside of the US and coming to the United States, and you were either studying or you just started working in the United States. Is there something in particular that you'd like to say about your experience just being an adult and moving to the United States, you know, coming to this country? Is there a special sort of kind of experience that you feel like you got, and maybe some words of wisdom that you'd like to impart on any other young woman or young man, you know, that is coming from a different country and sort of starting fresh in the United States? Is there something that you want to say to those people?
I do.
Go ahead, Graciela.
Lately, because of my involvement with the Immigrant Architects Coalition that we started about a year and a half ago with two other colleagues, one from China and one from Iraq, I've been exposed to a lot of immigrants that are either thinking to come here or are here already, and they have no clue on how to navigate the system. The system meaning your degree validation, your licensing validation, how to get a job, what the salaries are, all these different constraints that you don't really know how to handle because you're coming from another country and you don't know what's going on here. So I've been exposed to them, meaning that they reach out to me and we go through a series of conversations on, okay, this is what you need to do for your degree, for your university papers, your licensing pad is going to be like this, things like that. So always come and try to find that person that can advise you on how to navigate the system. I call the system. And also cultural, because whatever you're coming from, try to manage that. There are cultural bias. No matter where you go, it happens. It's the world. We are humans, you know, it's our nature. So manage that too. Adapt to the culture, learn from it. Something very specific that I did when I came here at the beginning, I was like, I don't want to be like all my good friends, best friends are going to be Latin people, because then I'm going to be, you know, limited to that. And I came here because I wanted to learn about the culture, you know? So why would I surround myself with people from my culture and then miss on all this diversity experience, diverse experience. So I had that very clear. And I just recently talked to a woman from Spain over the weekend, and she was like struggling. And I said, what's your surrounding group? And she's like, all my Spanish friends, and they work with me, and I don't talk to anybody else. And I was like, well, that's what you have to change, Dawn. Of course, they are your friends. It's your family, because friends are our family. But you got to also dedicate some time to meet other people and adapt to the culture. So have your friends at set times, but you also have to come out of that circle and start doing your own life in America. You know, so that's something that I always tell people when they come here. Try to the culture and navigate in the system. It's very important at the beginning.
My advice is just make sure your immigration status is correct. You have the green card or the visa, whatever. Then the next step will be, is there any job? Are there any opportunities? Everything. If you don't have that covered, it's not worth it, because your time is not going to be, all those things that you have to do is going to go to waste, basically. Just make sure that your paperwork is, you know, kosher, and then the next step are everything else.
All right. Well, thank you for that. So now I'm just going to skip to asking you, maybe you both, a couple of questions, and I'm going to call on your name when it's time for you to answer.
Okay.
So I'm going to start with Graciela. Graciela, how long have you been involved with the AIA?
So as soon as I moved here, I joined the association. Like I would say maybe 2006, just because I was looking for like that networking support, you know. But then I started taking like classes for the ARE. And in 2011, the board asked me if I wanted to join as the associate director. So technically from 2012, I started as the associate director at the Long Island chapter. And once I got my license a few years later, then I moved onto the board of directors. At that time, I was the only woman at the board. And that was like that for a few years until I decided we need more women here. And I got a scholarship to go to the Women Leadership Summit. And when I went to that event, I was like, this is crazy. We were 450 women, architect women in a room being lectured by amazing professionals. And I was like, I don't have this in Long Island. We need to do something. And so I came back to Long Island. I co-founded the committee, the Women in Architecture Committee, with Ebru Sulkar. And then since I was in the board on those years, then other women started joining the board. So now we are three. So basically, that's how I got involved late in the 2000s. And throughout the years, I have held other positions on national level. I was the young architect director for New York State for 2 years. And that was also a very important time for me, because it just opened doors to a national base of networking. And that was great.
Well, let me ask you, I mean, you said that at the time when you sort of first started on the board, especially, that you were the only woman there. Besides being the only woman, were there other initial challenges that you faced in joining AIA Long Island? Like, were there any other sort of things that you saw that needed to be changed besides the demographic between male and female?
Yeah, the demographic, definitely. That was a challenge. And I think we little by little, we are being successful in bringing more women into the chapter, and not only bringing them, but having them like participating, because they were there. They just didn't participate. So that was one challenge, definitely. And also like young people, like I used to go to the monthly meetings, and I would not see like young professionals. I'm like, what is going on here? Where are they? So me and Jake Rivalsi, which is a past president, he was the president before me. He was an emerging professional. He just passed that limit. both of us, we co-founded the Emerging Professionals Committee in 2015. So that opened up the door to all these young members to start being active and you know, participating in the chapters initiatives. So, and that's another very successful committee because we have about 8 members that are putting together events and activities all the time. And so I'm very, very happy for that. So that I would say those two were very challenging, and also to do new things, you know, like for 75 years, I think things run a certain way. So when Jake started actually as the president, we started, he was the president and I was the president-elect, so vice president. And then we started like proposing new things, like, oh, we should change this, you know, we should do this differently. So it was at the beginning, it was like a little bit, I wouldn't say controversial, but oh my God, but we're going to change things now. Like we've been doing this all over, like all over the same over the years. And especially last year, because of COVID, we had to change a lot of things that we used to do in a certain way. And that was great because I like change. And the good thing about that is that now I hear from the members that they like that. And they always said, oh, we like the fresh blood that you and Jake brought to the chapter, because yeah, we're young, you know, I'm still an emerging professional. So that I think that's very important, that the members see change and in a good way. You know, you want to have new things. It's we're in 2021, so definitely things have to evolve. So yeah, those were like my challenges from the past.
I imagine that you've brought a lot of that experience just being at the chapter for so long and having to go through all of these changes as a part of your, let's say, theme for your presidency. Maybe change exclamation point is a major part of your theme as president. Is there anything else that once you, let's say, became president, or even as you were vice president, was there something that you very much wanted to be a major part of your presidency as well, along with the change? You know, maybe there's some other kind of changes that you sort of foresaw as being part of your term. And of course, we all didn't see COVID-19 coming along, but was there anything else that you sort of brought with you and you decided that that was going to be a major theme for your term?
Well, we in my chapter, we don't really handle things like other chapters. Like every year they have a theme. We don't do that in Long Island. And maybe that's a possibility that we can start doing that in the future. You know, I'm not thinking that's not possible. We should maybe start doing that. But since we don't have an actual theme, when I started last year as a president, my goal really was to connect more with the members, but seriously connect with them. We have 680 members. And from those 680, I'll probably know 40 or 50. That's nothing. And I'm really like, I really want to do outreach work. So I was like, okay, so when we start, we're going to start at the meetings, and each meeting is going to be led by one director, because I wanted my directors to be exposed to, like, they always, the members always know who the president is, but they don't know who the directors are. They don't talk to them, you know. Well, they do, but not really that much. So I had this whole plan that we're going to do, and we're going to get create that connection and more participation. And that COVID came and everything went really bad. Like, what communication are you going to have? Like, through a camera. So that was very challenging at the beginning. And it still is, because I feel like I have not fulfilled my main goal, which was to create that direct connection with most of the members. So, but I think I'm getting there, and it's not only this year. I'm going to be still part of the chapter for the next 2 years when I'm past president. I will still keep working on those things. And also part of what I wanted to do was to change, like you said, change things. Change the venues of the big events that we host every year. There's been always the same venue for years and years and years. So again, COVID didn't allow us to do that. So maybe this year we can start doing those type of changes. So we definitely have new things to look for and do. So we'll see how it goes.
Well, I think in a way COVID did change that, because you did change venues. It's just maybe not to the venue that you wanted it to be, but you know,
yeah,
this little rectangle here has become our new venues. And do you think that actually speaking about COVID and being virtual for, you know, an entire year, do you think that that has brought maybe some existing members out of the woodwork and, you know, participating a little bit more in chapter activities? Do you feel like it's gotten people to be able to participate a little bit more, especially people who might live a little bit further away from where your events usually happen, and maybe some people outside of your chapter who might have been able to join things? Do you think that it's helped in any kind of way?
Definitely. It has helped a lot. I see a lot of names on the screen that I don't know who they are. I like it and I don't. I like the webinars because, yes, you can watch a webinar from wherever you are and it doesn't matter, you are there. What I don't like is that with the webinar, you cannot see people's faces or you cannot interact with them. And that's what frustrates me because I want to talk to people. But what I liked the most too from last year was that we were able to collaborate with so many chapters, not only in New York State, but outside from the state, like Virginia, Florida, Cleveland. We did a lot of collaboration. And I love that because it's when you really see the power of putting together something, you know? And I think that was created because of COVID, and I don't think that's going to change. I think that collaboration concept is now more stronger than before. And I think that's something that I embrace a lot because we can learn a lot from other regions and we can show that to our members.
Yeah. It's the bright side of COVID-19, right? I guess. So Sarah, we'll get to you next. We'll learn a little bit more about your path through AIA. How long have you been involved? And maybe you can repeat what made you get involved with the AIA?
Sure. I didn't have any involvement with AIA, and that was due to mistrust of many of my colleagues with AIA. And every time, you know, that I would talk about it, when I was working for another company, my colleague would tell me, you have to pay something and there's nothing in return. So they were all had negative experiences. So I wasn't involved with AIA. You know, I got my license, I paid my dues, you know, and nothing else. Till one day, about also 4 years ago, one of the members of the AIA Bronx, one of the active members, called me in the middle of the day out of the blue. And usually when I don't recognize a number, you know, I don't pick up. And somehow it was a sign from God or something. I picked up the phone and that was Bob Estern. And he was saying, you know, that we have a meeting and you should come. You live in the Bronx, you work in the Bronx. And how about tomorrow we have our monthly meeting? Stop by and see if you like it. So which I did the following day. So not knowing where I was going. So I went for this to check out basically this group of people. I got in a cute restaurant in City Island. We were all sitting down around like a big dining room, and they were about 9 gentlemen. They knew each other from a long time. And really, really nice people, but it felt like a boys club that, you know, they're good together. They know each other and they come every month to chat, things like that. So at the end of the meeting, I turn around and I ask that gentleman who introduced me to the group that, do you have any women members? And there was like a silence for 30 seconds and then said, oh yes, we have Victoria, but she moved to Brooklyn. So I guess you, but I said, okay, that's it. That's it. You know, I found my challenge and I love puzzles. I love challenges. So the following month, I was there, the first one there, the month after. And at one of those meetings, they told me that, you know, they wanted a director for AIA Bronx and they asked me if I want to do it. So I went back to my mentor and I said, you know, Alan, they're asking me to be a director, but what is the job for? What do I do? And he said, you know, you ate two bagels with them and they offered you a director job. So what did you tell them? And so it was just started with as a joke, basically, and a challenge. And then I fell in love with the community, what they were doing, their camaraderie between them, made sure that every month I was there for the meetings and I would bring more people, especially young women, to the gatherings. After a while, I became, after the director, vice president, and this year I was elected the president, which I am, as you said, it's the first time that they have a woman as the president of the chapter. So I'm very proud of it. And I felt a lot of pressure on me, on myself, because I want to prove to those gentlemen that, you know, you waited 100 years, but it was worth it. We have a group of young students in architecture. We have a young, newly, recently graduated, different colors, different backgrounds, different everything that join us each month. So we are on the right path.
Yeah, it sounds like it. And your presidency started this year.
Yes, right? January 1st.
Okay. And how long is your term?
A year.
A year.
As long as I'm good at it. Maybe you want to get rid of me before. They told me for a year.
No, I don't think that they will. From what I can see, I don't think that they will. But besides it being, let's say, a small group, and besides you having to travel all the way to City Island, which is not easy to get to, you know, by public transportation for anybody who's in New York City. But were there other sort of initial challenges that you found when you first started joining? It doesn't sound like there were very many because you shot up the ladder.
It was, I think they were looking for somebody to do something, you know, rather than just talking. Every meeting, the main discussions was about how much they hate DOB, how much they couldn't stand the rules and regulations that is coming up. So everybody was talking about that. When I started, especially as a vice president, in the beginning as a director, what I did was to bring money to our group because a lot of excuses were, we don't have the money. Every time I wanted to say something, oh, we don't have the money. So I said, okay, I'm going to get the money. So I contacted a lot of companies. I do interior design. So I'm very familiar with companies that make materials for construction. I contacted them one after the other and asked them to come and sponsor us, give us an AIA learning unit, talk about their, you know, do the seminar, and then sponsor us for additional money and to, so we can do other good things. So that's how I started. And then after that, I wanted, my emphasis was on community outreach. You know, we are in the Bronx and the stereotype of the Bronx is not too far from the reality of the Bronx. 10 minutes from where I live, the poorest community in the United States live there. Going and talking about beautiful museums and amazing designs sounded so out of place sometimes when people living in the neighborhood that we are working, they don't know what to eat and what to give their kids to eat that day. We started thinking about how we can connect our community as architects to the neighborhood that we work and we live. And I started a program for children. I was volunteering, actually. I was a volunteer in schools in the Bronx. The first one, actually, I volunteered was an all-boys school. One of my colleagues who was a male architect introduced me to that program. I went to the school early before anybody showed up. And I went to the principal and I introduced myself. And I said, I thought they were expecting me. And I said, you know, I'm Sarah Jazayeri and I'm an architect. And he looked at me up and down and said, but you're a woman. I said, yes, I think so. But is there a problem? And he said, you know, this is an all boys school. And we were expecting a male architect. And I said, you know, I can do anything that the male architect can do. And give me a class to work on for an hour. And I'm already here. And if you don't like it, then ciao, you know, no problem. We'll send you a male architect. And from that day, when I had the connection with the kids, they loved me and I loved them. And that was the beginning of my love for being more involved in our community. So we started contacting architectural firms in New York City. And we told them, you know, we have a lot of schools that the families of those kids, they live under $15,000 a year. Most of them, they are not going to graduate even middle school. High school is a luxury. So our goal is to open their minds to another world, something that is accessible with just staying in school and continue their education. Bus them to very fancy schmancy firms in the city, show them all those people that work in different positions, and especially African-American, especially women, especially Latinos, especially other minorities that are in leadership positions. And the only difference between them and their future is just staying in school and studying. Make them just feel special. My goal was that the only thing that they would remember from sixth grade, you know, they wouldn't remember the teachers, their classmates, but they would remember, oh, we went and visit an architectural firm when I was in sixth grade. Our first session was on March 11th, 2020. So like 45 minutes before that, we had to call and cancel it. And this whole time, we're thinking about doing it another way, but the title of our mission was Where I Work. So 2-3 months ago, we said, okay, that's it. We have to do something. We don't know how long this is going to last. And we tried to come up with a program that is online, but interactive. We had that session last week and it was amazing. You know, we were coming out of it with, you know, like goosebumps, all of us, because we did what we wanted to do and we succeeded. And that was that achievement of goal achievement was so uplifting. We started with a bunch of kids, Zoom meeting. We had a small video in the beginning, and then we did a model of a museum with just a piece of paper with them, and then talked about what we do during the day, our daily lives. And in the beginning, we had like two kids with the cameras on. And then a little bit later, like 3, 4, 5, and we were just seeing those cameras turning on was amazing. And then, of course, I told them that whoever turns on their computer, I would give them a gift. So that helped also. Yeah. So we had
all of a sudden, you saw like 50 cameras come
on. Yes, exactly. And we hand delivered certificates in a frame with their names on it. So we made it very personalized. So those kids would feel special, and told them, you know, if you decide to become an architect in many years from now, you know, there's AIA Bronx. You come into our offices and we will help you. And we're going to do that more and more. So those activities, I think this is something that we should do more at AIA in any levels, whatever we can do.
So it sounds like that you've brought a lot of that sort of mentorship aspect into your presidency. Is that right?
Definitely.
Is that a major theme to your presidency?
Absolutely. There is a lot to do. I'm not going to lie about it. There's a lot of work to do. And, you know, we are all working architects. We have our families. We have our jobs. And on top of that, we are doing these kind of volunteer works. So it's difficult. I'm not saying that is easy. But I think all of us, we have the responsibility as a human being, where we are, with all the blessing that we had, there is something that we have to give back to our community. And that is our duty, not a choice, not that something that I want or I don't want it. I think everybody has to do it at their level. It doesn't have to be, you know, something big. Just smiling to a kid and tell them, you know, that they are special. That could be as simple as that. But you have to do something.
And how do you feel like that message is resonating so far in your chapter?
I think it was welcomed. We had our meeting, monthly meeting yesterday. Bob Esnert, who invited me the first time and gave me the bagel, he was so impressed. And he said that this is the best thing that had ever happened to this chapter since he joined 30 years ago. Wow. So that was a big compliment.
Yeah.
And not only for me, you know, I am getting to a time of in my career that I have seen a lot, I've done a lot, but those young, recently graduate, the students who were there or architects who were there, they felt so proud of themselves. That was just seeing their faces was priceless. Yeah. I loved it.
Well, and is the goal for, let's say, the things that you started to be continued after your presidency is done? Because I'm sure even just listening to you, I think a year is just not enough. Now I know why, you know, other terms in political world are like longer.
Yes.
You just can't, it almost feels like you can't get anything done by the time you actually get started.
True.
It's time for your presidency to end.
So. Absolutely. Absolutely. That's why you have to involve others.
Yeah.
You know, this is not something that you can do by yourself. You need a team. And then giving opportunities, giving titles, giving those got a boy, you know, kind of compliments to the young generation helps and gives them motivation and incentive to do better, to go higher on the hierarchy of their leadership in AIA and others in their careers too. Definitely. We have two young women now that and three young gentlemen who helped me with that program. And then they are also, I'm sure they are going to go far. Now that they have the opportunity.
So, Graciela, I know that you started Powerful Speeches. Can you tell us a little bit about how that was started and why that was started and how you were able to connect successfully with not only your chapter, but with other chapters and groups nationwide?
Yeah, so Powerful Speeches was created while I was driving from work home. And I'm thinking, we're in the middle of COVID, and there's so much out there that is going on. And I don't have a whole, like, I was like, oh my God, I'm missing so much because I can't, like, see all these different events going on. And I was, it was just anxiety. Like, I need to know what's happening in the world of the women in architecture. So I was like, maybe I should just put together a schedule. I was thinking just by myself, like for myself, where I can group them all and start planning my week, like which event I want to attend. Since now Zoom World allow us to go to Cincinnati or whatever. Yeah. So then I realized, but wait, if I'm doing this and this is going to help me so much, this is going to help other professionals too, not only women, like whatever, they can just go to a website and see what's going on in our either women architecture or EDI world. Yeah, so that pretty much, I started that website on a Sunday night watching TV. I put it together and I was like, this is it. And then of course, I distributed along the other women in architecture committees since, thank God, because of my position, I have those connections. So I was able to send them the message, hey, I just put this together. Use it if you want it. If not, that's fine. And the response I have I had was amazing. Like they were like, oh my God, this is the best. Because I guess they were struggling too. Like I was struggling. Like I want to go to this one, but I don't know what's going on in another room, you know?
Right.
So the feedback was very positive. And then after that, I was like, ooh, what about podcast? Like there's so many, I like to listen to podcasts. So I'm like, there's so many podcasts out there.
Like this one.
Like this one, exactly. Which by the way.
But not as good as this one, please precise.
Yeah, so I was like, why don't I just put a page with podcasts hosted by women in architecture? So boom, then like the next week I had like 30 podcasts there on the website. And again, the feed was amazing. Like, oh my God, that's great. We can go there, listen to whatever we want. And then the latest was early this year, one of my colleagues, Diane Lesson, posted a question on the Women Architects Collective group on Facebook. And she was like asking something about salary. Like, what's your salary at this position? I'm getting this new job and I want to get a feel of if it's fair or if I'm getting paid, like, you know, reasonably. And then I realized, I'm like, Diane, we got such a good response on that question that you did that we should actually work on a survey. You know, like there's been numerous surveys about salaries, but I have never seen like one specifically for women in architecture. So when you go to like the AIA survey database or I don't know. There are so many out there.
The Glassdoor.
There's always, yes, you can look at a salary, but you don't know if it's for a male or for a woman. And we know that the difference inside the gap is big. We are underpaid about 16% statistically by surveys. I was like, let's just put together one for women so we can identify as women, how are we getting paid around the States. So we put together that, like I would say maybe 3 weeks ago, we have had so far like 700 responses, which is great.
Yeah, excellent.
But then we realized maybe we should open these to men and have men and women. So then we can start really comparing apples to apples. So that's going to be the next phase of the survey. We're going to incorporate a lot of different items that we have received from the feedback from those 700 people that have completed the survey. So we are actually going to update the survey, make it better with more data to compare. And we want to open to men so we can actually see, not only to see the difference, we know what the difference is, but we want to start that conversation, which is right now a taboo. Like people don't talk about that. And we should be talking about salaries because it's the only way we can advocate for ourselves. So yeah, that's like my little baby right now. And I'm very excited for that project.
Yeah, that's great. Well, we're excited to see how far this is going to go as well. And the results of that survey. I know I'm waiting for it.
Yes. They're coming soon.
And what is this FB foreign architects?
Yes.
Yeah, so Facebook foreign architects.
Well, the foreign architects Facebook group is a group that Gloria Clotter from Tampa, she founded that group. Almost at the same time that I co-founded the Immigrant Architects Coalition, like they both like started sort of like at the same time. So the foreign architect group has, I forgot how many, but thousands of members right now. And it's a platform where we help each other with all these questions about working here or studying here or licensing. And there is people from all over the world. And like I said, at the same time, the Immigrant Architects Coalition, which Gloria is part of too, so that's how the two groups relate to each other. We are putting together a set of guidelines for immigrants. So when they come to the States, they know what to do. If they don't know a person like us that we can help, they at least can have that guideline. That, okay, this is what I need to do for my foreign degree. This is what I need to do for my experience. This is for licensing. We also talk about work, salaries, interview, preparation, cultural bias. We talk about different topics. And we are actually writing those guidelines with other immigrants that we met when we gave a lecture in A19 in Vegas. That was the first time we presented as the Immigrant Architects Coalition. And then we had such a good feedback that day. A lot of people came to us and like, so we saw the need of a support group. And that's how the coalition started. And some of them are working with us on the preparation of the guidelines. It's still in the process because that takes a long time to write all those articles and chapters. But we're getting there. As much as we produce, it gets posted on the website. Once we have a final product, we want to start pushing that at AIA, like try to give that to the chapters. So when they know that they have immigrants coming or joining the chapter, it's going to be a resource for them to be guided. So that's another project that I'm very passionate about.
Yeah, great. That sounds wonderful. And Sarah, I know that I saw you speak at the New York Builds Conference just before, you know, COVID shutdowns happened last year. Can you tell us a little bit about some other organizations and sort of groups that you're a part of, that you're proud to be a part of?
Proud to be a part of. Yes, that makes it different.
Don't talk about anything that you're not proud to be part of.
Right. The Women in Architecture. These are a group of architects that get together once a month, minimum once a month for their monthly meetings, besides the other events that they are organizing. And they are part of New York, Manhattan. If it wasn't for them, I wouldn't be here. I was working isolated, you know, with going to work, coming home. And then when I started my own firm, same thing. But when I joined that team, they taught me that I'm not the only one with these issues. These problems that I have at work is not just me. There are a lot of people like me, and I fit it in. Actually, I felt that I was part of a community, and the people who were coming and they were talking about different things, I could relate to them. And then that was one part, but the other part was inspiration. They inspired me. Once a month, there's something that they organized calling Breakfast with Whoever. These are usually cool architects from around the world that they come, women, talk about their experience or their latest project. And I was looking at them and seeing, you know, I can be her, you know, or sometimes I'm better than her. Or sometimes, you know, I want to be her, you know. So it wasn't like those places that you go and you're bored after 2 hours and just wanted to get the your point, LEU point, and HSW and get out of the meeting. I wanted to be there. I wanted to go there and I wanted to talk to other people. And I made friends. And that was the time that I realized that AIA, it's an organization that we must participate in it. Not just like my other colleagues stay, you know, not participating and just saying negative thing about it. These people are us. You know, we shouldn't expect other people to do our job. If you want some change, if you're like, Graciela that was talking about, you have to do it yourself. Just be part of that change. So I got more involved in Women in Architecture, and they had mentoring, speed mentoring. It's like dating, speed dating, but you know, you don't get the ring at the end of it on your fingers, but you get a lot of love in your heart. So I participated in that. They invited me to be a mentor, and I was doing it I still am doing it twice a year. Besides, there are other activities that I'm involved with them, and are amazing group of women. So that's the one that I'm, you as you were saying, which one you're proud of. This one is on top of it. But of course, there are little organizations that, you know, there are mostly charity organizations. Charity organizations, a lot of them involved in the community of the Bronx, women and children. Those are my forte, basically. I wish I had more time. I wish I had 42 hours rather than 24 hours in a day, because I have the energy. Just a matter of, you know, at a certain time, I have to go to bed and sleep at least 4 hours. If you are listening to this, just pick up the phone, go online and see how you can help somebody else. It doesn't have to be an architect, but that karma, that energy, that positive energy that you get back from doing something nice, to be kind to others, to have a positive attitude, it will come to you and you will become a better architect. You will become a better person. So indirectly, it's going to help us, our community as architects, if you do something good for the others.
That's great. I mean, I completely understand, as somebody who often, even within this organization, feels like she doesn't fit in. Mm-hmm. I think that your message is important, is that you have to sort of keep on trying different pockets.
Shop around.
Shop around in order to find that place where you feel genuinely like, this is my niche. This is the place where I totally fit in, and
absolutely,
these are my people.
Definitely, Talicia. You know, especially as a young architect, every time you go to some of those meetings, you think that, oh, they are so much better than me. They are so much smarter than me, and you put yourself down. And this is a natural thing that most of us, unfortunately, especially with women, we get that. You know, we focus on the negative rather than the positives. And it can have a negative effect on yourself, you know, made you even less important as what you thought you were before going to those meetings. But shop around, talk to people, and you will find a group of people that will uplift you, will inspire you, and they're going to empower you.
Right. Yeah. And that also goes to what Graciela was saying at the beginning about being shy, and the both of you experienced when you first came to your AIA meetings, and it was an old boys club, yes. You know?
Yeah.
And just sort of coming out of your shell just a little bit, you know, coming out of your comfort zone, maybe just a little bit, and you might see that you fit right in, you know?
and when you're when you're confident, you begin to attract others who mm-hmm. want to support you, who want to help you, to encourage you. Confident is attractive. So mm-hmm. by showing, when you go to those places, first of all, young architects, network as much as you can. And it doesn't have to be with other architects. Your next door neighbor could have a cousin of a stepfather of a of an uncle who's an architect, and one day they might help you. Network as much as you can and be confident. You are enough. You are good. Just you have to work more on yourself to get better and better, learn new things, update yourself. It's okay to be shy. It's okay to be quiet, but nobody will pay you for things that you know. They will pay you for the things that you know, and you bring it into action.
Sage words of advice. So, Graciela, do you want to say something? Do you want to add something to that?
Yeah, like when we were talking about getting out of your comfort zone and just exposing yourself, putting your face out. And this is specifically for immigrant people like Sarah and I. Sometimes, besides being shy, you feel I wouldn't say less, but yes, in a way less, because of the language barrier. And then people don't want to speak because they feel like, oh, I'm going to say something wrong, or they are not going to understand me. And what I tell them all the time, and because I believe so, and that's the way I see it. Sometimes having an accent and being different is actually good. I actually think it's good, and it works in your favor. Because in my case, for instance, as soon as I open my mouth with my accent and my Colombian face, people are like, what are you doing here? Like, why did you decide to move? And where? And the first thing, of course, is where is your accent from? So it's like an icebreaker, you know? So I always tell them, use that to your advantage. Always think that at least you speak more than one language. You speak two, three, who knows? And you're bringing a different culture here. So don't ever think that because you are a foreign person, you cannot relate to others and you should be quiet. Just actually speak and speak loud, because people will like you because of that. And it's gonna make you, like Sarah said, a better person and a better architect in the future. So that will be my advice.
Yeah, you know, when I was in college, I actually studied foreign languages. And one of my Spanish teachers, she used to say that having an accent just means that you're from someplace. So don't be ashamed of it, because it means that you're from somewhere. Mm-hmm. And even people within this country have different accents, right? Like,
yeah,
even as different as Brooklyn and the Bronx or Brooklyn and Long Island, you know, the mm-hmm. accents are going to be different. So
I heard once somebody told me that if somebody comment on your accent, say that a negative comment, I mean, say that you think with your brain, not your accent. So
yeah, that's great.
I love that.
That's great. So I know that we're coming at the time, but I can't let you leave without asking you the hard-hitting questions. So this is where this interview is going to get tough, okay? I'm just warning you.
Are you going to ask me how old I am? Because you're not going to get that answer from me.
Oh, darn. Hold on. Let me just cross that off my list. So these are just a few lighthearted questions, you know. I like to end on these questions, so take them as lighthearted. Okay. So, do you prefer pancakes or waffles?
Oh, pancakes.
Pancakes, no doubt.
Okay. Cake or pie?
Oh, cake.
Pie.
Graciela.
What's your favorite kind of music to listen to?
Mine, new wave.
80s, 90s.
Yeah.
From anywhere in the world.
I love industrial German.
Okay. Is being late unacceptable or sometimes it happens?
Unacceptable.
Unacceptable, but from my culture, it happens.
Okay. What's your go-to karaoke song?
Any Depeche Mode song for me.
Happy birthday.
Happy birthday. I hope you're usually going out karaokeing on a birthday.
somebody has a birthday that day.
Okay. Do you find horoscopes to be BS or fascinating?
That's a tough question. I told you these are going to be tough.
Yeah. I should have told you to fasten your thinking cap.
Yeah. I think if you're on vacation, I would say it is, you have to read them. Definitely, you have to read them if you're on vacation.
Only on vacation?
Only on vacation.
I think you have to read them. I never read them anymore, but I used to read them all the time. And they always tell you good things, so why not? You know, you got to do it. You never read a one that is telling you, or you're going to die tomorrow. You know?
That's true.
Especially not on vacation.
Yeah. So this one is really controversial. Pineapple or no pineapple on your pizza? You have to choose wisely here, because there are some people in the
pineapple
room.
Come on. No pineapple. If you're Italian and they ask you that question and you say yes, they're going to take away your passport. This is a sin.
Pineapple completely.
Yeah.
I always like all the opposite, strange, weird, and against the norm.
Okay. Do you think that a hot dog is a sandwich?
Yes, of course.
No.
Anybody in the world besides Graciela?
Of course I have to say no. It's a hot dog.
All right. Well, thanks for playing along and thank you for being here today. I'll let you off the hook with my tough questions now so you can relax.
It was a pleasure, Talisha. Graciela, to being with both of you, amazing women, accomplished women. And thank you for having me.
Thank you for being here. Thank you to you both.
Thank you. Thank you. I never really talked to Sarah. This is the first time and I loved it. Like, seriously, we got so much in common. And like,
besides the pineapple, come on.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
And that could be, a breaker.
But no, Talisha, I think you do a great job being the host of these talks. Have you considered changing careers?
Sometimes, it's something to think about. It probably pays more. After your salary survey comes out, I'll figure something else out.
No, thank you. Thank you so much for putting this platform together. This is really good in all ways. And I'm very honored to be here with Sarah and you, and sharing our stories to everyone.
Well, thank you for joining us for this episode of EP Architalk. Be sure to like and subscribe and tell us how we're doing. Until next time, bye.
Bye, everybody. Bye.